Well, good morning to everybody. So nice to be here. I'd like to bring you greetings from my ecclesia. Let's fake you out a little bit. LA Hispanic, Los Angeles Hispanic Ecclesia. It's a Spanish-speaking ecclesia. It's in downtown LA, so it's rightfully named Los Angeles. Most of our ecclesias, you know, are not named for where they are anymore. Got that all mixed up somehow. But we are actually in Los Angeles, and we speak Spanish only. And you're going to think, whoa, that guy can speak Spanish. So you come up to me and go, and I won't know, understand a thing you said in Spanish. So I do well, but I'm a work in progress. But the brethren are very nice, brothers and sisters there, and come down and visit us sometime. It's actually quite a cultural experience you enjoy. So we're going to talk about our readings today, and that's in Galatians 1 and 2. We're going to talk about a very strange, only once in the Bible occurrence, and I'm going to tell you why it's so strange. We just read it in Galatians 2 there. It was about when Peter came to visit in Antioch, and Paul basically really goes off on him big time, tells him off. If you look at Galatians chapter 2, verse 11, he shows up there, and when Peter was come to Antioch, I withstood him to the face because he was to be blamed. Now here's an older stalwart of the ecclesia, you know, one of the key disciples of Jesus, and Paul's newer in the truth, of course, and Paul withstands him to the face there. And you think, well, why did he do that? And we're not even going to talk about why. We're just going to talk about what happened. Because normally, when you have a problem with someone, don't you normally kind of take them to the side? You know, you don't rebuke them in front of everybody. You kind of pull them off into that room there, maybe, and say, Paul to Peter, you know, I need to set you straight about something. You're being inconsistent. But you know what's amazing about this incident is Peter takes it. Peter takes it perfectly. I don't see that happen too often. An older brother takes it from this newer in the truth, and just takes it. And he doesn't just rebuke him privately. Look at verse 14. He rebukes him. I said unto Peter before them all. It's like I did this right here. I'm going to rebuke one of you older people. Again, so there aren't many older than me anymore. But I'm going to rebuke one of you. And he does, and Peter takes it. I'd like to just suggest that this is an amazing chapter incident here. An amazing, it doesn't happen enough. And Peter is amazing. And you know, the proof of it is in Acts 15, verse 7, when they come all together later on the Jerusalem Council, Peter basically repeats the words of Paul, the idea, the concept that Paul is putting across here, not the words exactly, but the concept of how to, of the dealing with the Gentiles. So Peter not only doesn't lash back at him, he actually defends him at the Jerusalem Council. So that's this part's so unnatural. I'd love to see it happen more, but it doesn't happen too much. So now let's look at what's more natural. So I'm going to give you a real humdinger of a different situation. So I'm going to have you turn to Judges chapter 15. And John called about vengeance. It's actually vengeance in the form of revenge, the most evil of vengeances here. We're going to talk about revenge. And we're talking about Samson. We're cutting right in the middle of his life. We're not going to deal with his whole story here. And it's after the incident where he lost his wife, and he's coming back to woo his wife in verses 1 and 2 of Judges 15. And I love Samson because Samson is so transparent. You can see right through him, and we're going to see right through him here. So in verse 1 and 2, I'm going to assume you know the story mostly, but he comes to woo his wife. He goes back with, and he brings a kid, and he goes to the father-in-law, and but the father-in-law tells him the bad news that the woman's been given to someone else. I'd just like to make a note. Now, most guys, you know, think of flowers or you think of candy. I'd like you to broaden it out. Think of a little goat. Might actually be useful sometimes, too. Bring a little goat. So in verse 1, he brings a little goat to woo her back, although you have to admit it did not work well here. So maybe not. So what happens is Samson is really mad. He's been jilted here. Jilted. So what we're going to look at is three what I call bad logics. three bad logics that we're going to get in this discourse, this incident about Samson here. So our first bad logic comes in verses 3 and 4. So verse 3, it says, "And Samson said concerning them, now shall I be more blameless than the Philistines, though I do them a displeasure. And he went out and found 300 foxes and did his evil deed with that." That's bad logic number one. And this is it. And you may recognize it in your own life. I do. That he would be more blameless than the Philistines. That when you're in a revenge situation, someone did something really bad to you, really messed you big, you're quite okay then to do something back as long as it's a little less than the level that they did to you. You can be kind of you're going to be less blameless than them. So they're still the baddest of the bunch, but you can be a little bad back, and that's okay. That's bad logic number one. Comes in verse 3 there. And don't you think that we do that? You know, our neighbor's dog digs up our prize roses. So when we're walking our dog across their front lawn, we let our dog do a little business on their lawn. Now, the digging up the roses was a lot worse, right? The little extra on their lawn, that's the little blood. That's just because they were so bad, I can do a little bad back. That's what we do when revenge starts to hit. We get to start keeping score of whose is a little badder than the other person. So what happens? You think this is going to end? Nope. Verse 6, so the Philistines said, after they lost all their harvest from the foxes, and they answered, who did this? And they say, Samson. And then they come and burn the woman and her father with fire. So there's a counter action. Certainly that was really turning up the heat here a little, isn't it? Turning the heat up a lot. So we come to verse 7, and we get to bad logic number 2. So you got bad logic 1. Watch it in verse 7, bad logic number 2. "And Samson said unto them, though ye have done this, yet will I be avenged of you, and after that I will cease." You know what the bad logic there is? I will cease. Do you think it ceases? Do you think you can do a zinger on somebody and then all of a sudden they're, okay, you got me, I'm done? No. We've got the full chapter more of more revenge to come here. There is not a point where I'll just do this bad thing now and then it's all going to be good. Everything, we've overcome evil with greater evil here. That's bad logic number 2. It doesn't work that way. So what happens, it escalates to an army. This became like a little family feud to a little village feud. And now look at verse 9. The Philistines, not just a village, the Philistines came up and pitched against in Judah and spread themselves in Lehi. And so what happens is the men of Judah become involved in verse 10. So now we've got a national crisis going on here. And we get to verse 11, there's 3,000 men of Israel involved. So now we're getting to verse 11, which is bad logic number 3. All right, bad logic number 3. So you got these 3,000 men on the top of this rock, and Samson, and they come with this idea they're going to rope him up and deliver him, but Samson's going to do some more to him. And look at the bad logic in here. What is this that thou hast done unto us? And they said at the end here, and they said unto them, as he said unto them, as they did unto me, so have I done unto them. Now that has just a little taste of something I can't remember from the Sermon on the Mount, like some like the Golden Rule. But it's not the Golden. Wait. This is not the Golden Rule here. This is the opposite of Golden Rule. What do you call the opposite of gold? Anyway, this is the Golden Rule gone totally astray here. Basically, as they have done unto me, so I can do unto them. And that's what we sometimes do. Haven't we seen this in the supermarket? Have you been in the supermarket and someone butts in line in front of you? And you're standing in line and it's obviously the most important day, the day before Thanksgiving or something. Someone goes in front of you. And you say, how dare they? You know what you do? You rally up the people next to you and say, do you see what they're doing? And you know what they're going to do? We're going to have to do something about this. We can't let them get away with this. Some justice has to be done here. And we do that. Our bad logic is we can do that kind of thing. So verse 15, this you can see coming a mile away. he finds a new jawbone of an ass. And with that, he kills 1,000 men. And so a lot of people die in this situation. So I'm going to give you six quick points here. First is revenge is inflammatory. It gets worse. It actually doesn't cease. Bad logic number two, it actually grows over time. So number one is that. Number two, over time, the problem's still going. These things don't solve themselves. They keep on going. You know the story of Romeo and Juliet? I'm sure you've all heard of that. If not, I'm going to give you a spoiler alert. I'm going to spoil the story for you. They both die in the end. They both die in the end. And you wonder, how come they die in the end, dear Romeo and Juliet? You know, it tells us. It tells us in Act 1, Scene 1, three civil brawls bred of an airy word by the old Capulet and Montague. What's an airy word? I don't know, but it killed Romeo and Juliet. They didn't do too well. And it just grew and grew and grew. And it was just started out with an airy word, which we don't even know what they are. That's the way it is. You know, number three, over time, people don't even know what happened. We just don't like them. I don't know why we don't like them, but we just don't like those people. My dad didn't like them, my grandmother, father didn't like them, and I don't like them. It just grows and we don't even know. Revenge is as barbaric as jawbones, point number four. I think they use the jawbone here. I'll make fun of the jawbone a little bit, maybe in a little, but I think it's just showing how crude this whole thing is. It's very, very barbaric is when you think of revenge in its raw form. Number five, forgiveness, which does not occur here, will always begin when you drop the jawbone. If you can drop the jawbone, it'll go away over time. And number six, this is just an extra point. I'm not even talking about killing people here today. I'm not talking about killing people. I'm talking about gossip. I'm talking about avoidance of people. I'm talking about exclusion, subtle little comments about people, holding your friends from those friends, and they those friends here, so our friends don't go here. You see this in ecclesias. You see it at a potluck. You see it in many, many ecclesias that there's a bit of a working around. They're over here, so I'm going to go over here. If they're in line first, I'm going to get in line last. Their table's there. My table's going to be over here. You even see them work in the room, kind of aware they're there, so I'm going to make sure I kind of keep myself over the side. Do you think I'm making this stuff up? I've done it myself. I've done that myself. No, this is real stuff. Okay, so I want you to come to Romans with me. Well, whose job is it to do this? So Romans chapter 12 is great. It's got a passage we all know. I'd like you to turn with Romans 12, verse 17. All right, Romans 12, 17. Recompense to no man evil for evil. Provide things honest in the sight of all men. If it be possible, as much as lieth in you, live peaceably with all men. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, saith the Lord. Therefore, if thine enemy hunger, feed him. If he thirst, give him drink. For in so doing, thou shalt heap coals of fire on his head. And be not overcome of evil, but overcome evil with good. The point for today is leave room for God's wrath. Basically, when somebody violates our sense of justice, we get this indignation. Pushed in line in front of us, something, my code has been broken. People are not supposed to cut in front of people, especially the day before Thanksgiving of all days, and they did that to me. When someone does that, it can't go unchecked. We cannot let people get away with that kind of thing. Life is just, it can't be fair. That is totally, grossly unfair. So bad logic number one, we can do something back to them, but revenge, that's what it says. It's up to me. No one else is going to do, look, we're rallying up there. What are we going to do about those people cut in line? Somebody's got to go do it. And the point of the matter is, it's not up to you. It's not your job to cause justice in the supermarket. Your job is not to be the patrolling the lines there. It's not up to you. And you know what even worse is our timetable. We all have a timetable. We need to meet justice right away. I mean, we don't want to wait another minute. They just cut in line. Something needs to be done right now. You know what? We leave it up to God. It's up to His timetable. You know what? His timetable is a lot different than our timetable. And He may not even deal with it at all. We leave it up to God. We don't say to God, I don't like, what we're saying to God really is, I don't like how you're running things here. I really don't. I know justice is in your court, but I don't think you're really doing a very good job here. Not at all. In fact, you need to speed it up, if anything. Speed it up, God, because I don't like how you're doing it. That's what we do. So, where are some verses on this? We're going to go to Ray's verse first. 1 Peter 2:23. Now I'll read it to you. It's about Jesus. Peter's talking about Jesus, who, when he was reviled, reviled not again. When he suffered, he threatened not, but committed himself to him that judgeth righteously. So Jesus, talk about the biggest travesty is what you're talking about. The most tragic travesty in the ever recorded in human history. And it was Jesus, and he did not decide to take justice into his own hands, but actually gave it to God. And if he did it, certainly someone cutting in line at the supermarket certainly is not of anywhere of the same of value. And then another verse, which I think is very nice on this, it's in the Sermon on the Mount. It's Matthew 5:44, and I'll read that one to you. But I say unto you, love your enemies, bless them that curse you, and do good to them that hate you, and pray for them which despitefully use you and persecute you. Now, I always read that verse really fast. You know, love your enemies, pray for them despitefully use you, blah, 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 and I'm done. You know what? I have a prayer list at home, and I stick people on my prayer list, and so I'll put them on. So I'm having trouble with this person, so I'll stick them on my list, and so I'm going through my prayers, and I go, and God bless my mom and dad, blah, 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 Joe Schmo, and my sister and my brother-in-law, and blah, blah, blah. I kind of stuck them in there, right? I did my job. I did my job, right? You know what the implication here? Look at the word love. Is to actually wish them well. It's a little stronger than just stick them on your prayer list. It's to wish them well. I'd like you to think about that. Think about people who have been really mean to you, and if you've lived long enough, you've seen a lot already. And can you wish them well? Now, I'd suggest to you, the first time you pray for somebody who's really done a whopper on you, you may just list Joe Schmo and move on quickly. The second time, the third time, fourth time, for the fifth time, you keep trying to wish them well, you can do it. But don't expect, you can, maybe the first time might not be too pretty. So, but to pray for them, to wish them well, and sometimes you have a real hard time doing that. I'm not speaking about trivial things here today, by the way. I'm not talking about someone who steps on your toe and you say sorry and you hug. I'm talking about really ugly stuff today. Really ugly stuff. And you wish them well. So here's four questions for you. Is there any situation in your life right now where you need to drop the jawbone? Something where that jawbone is out. You know how we are. We've got actually a holster for it. It fits on your belt, kind of like an iPod, a BlackBerry. It's actually neat how it slips in. Jawbone's going to curve. Slips right in smooth into your little holster. You can pull that out really fast. Just like that. I've got it. All right. Is there something in your life you need to put that thing back in the holster? Maybe you keep that in your car, too. You know, I like the one in the glove compartment. And at work, you know, it's good to have one in your desk drawer, too. A jawbone, just to be ready, right? Think about it. Is there something in your life need to drop your jawbone? Okay, number two, is there any situation in your life today where you're excusing wrong attitudes about yourself? You're kind of laying yourself some latitude. They're so bad, the government is so bad that I can do a little cheating on my whatever, or my boss is so bad I can take a little something when I need it. Is there any situation in your life where your moral code is being lessened because someone else supposedly did some bad. That's bad logic, number one. No. Number three, is there a situation in your life where you've taken matters in your own hands? It's God's domain, but no, I've taken on my sense of justice, and we're going to move up God's timetable. Is there anything in your life like that? And number four, is there anybody right now you can think of that you should be wishing well, that you're having trouble wishing well? Is there somebody in your life that'd do really well if you could just wish them well? So come with me to Matthew 18. We're going to look at a solution for this. Matthew 18, and it's the parable at the end. It's all about, we always often think of this parable about nailing people, or this chapter about nailing people. Matthew 18, yeah, let's go and get that brother. It's actually a chapter about reconciliation and forgiveness. We get to the end of the chapter, it's the parable of the unmerciful servant. I think you know the story where he gets forgiven a gazillions of dollars, and then he goes out and finds a guy who owes him a small amount of money and nails him for that. And then the king says, you're going to jail after all. Sends him to the torture scene. We actually have three scenes here, the king and the servant and his fellow servant, and then it kind of ends on this torture scene at the end. So that's our parable we're going to look at here. And I think you know it. So I'm going to give you seven notes about it and draw a conclusion as to how we can get the idea of the spirit of revenge and get more like Paul and Peter as he dealt with Paul. The first thing I'd like to note in this chapter, this parable, is that sometimes we think the king is kind of inattentive. But look at verse 23. Therefore, the kingdom of God is like a certain king who would take account of his servants. So point number one, this king is not a bad businessman. Sometimes we think this guy is kind of not with it. You know, forgiving a guy for a gazillion dollars, that certainly doesn't sound like a real boss type person to me. Now, this king knows how to keep track of what he's got. Number two point, why does the king cancel the debt? Well, I'd like to say one reason why he normally wouldn't, and that is verse 26, the servant goes to him and says, Lord, have patience with me, and I will pay thee all. That's a load of nothing there. You can't really have that. The guy will never be able to pay back a 60 million day wages, is the way I kind of put it out. 60 million day wages of money to pay back. That's a pathetic comment. There's no way the king can pay him back. So the king is not going to cancel his debt because he thinks that the servant is even being logical here. He's being somewhat a fantasy here. So that's not a reason. Was it good? Number three, was this good business of the king to even have an employee like this after this? After he finds out an employee has that much in debt to him, is that good business? I'd suggest maybe not there. Number four, our observation is this. Did the servant respect the king? I'd like to suggest no. The servant didn't respect the king because look at verse 27b. Oh, wait. There is no verse 27b. It says verse 27, then the Lord of that servant was moved with compassion and loosed him and forgave him the debt. 28, and that servant went out and found another fellow servant. Where did the guy even give him a hug? A thank you note. Utterance of pleasure. There's no gratitude here at all. There's no verse 27b. You'd expect that. Don't you expect that when somebody is forgiven that huge a debt that they even have a forgiveness party celebration? In fact, wait, I've never heard of one of those before. Why haven't I heard one of those before? Why haven't we ever had a forgiveness party celebration? Because don't we believe God forgives us? I wonder if we're a little dulled to that sometimes, that there's no verse 27b here. So where does the debt go? Well, I'm going to tell you, good business went out the door. You can't journal entry gazillions of dollars out of your books. He has this book here of ledger, I suppose, and he keeps track of things here, knows who's got what, and there's an entry for 60 gazillion dollars or whatever. There's no way you can do bookkeeping like that. So number six, the king tosses the books. There's no way to run this business like that. This is not a business to be run. He tosses the books. He disregards the whole thing. So number seven, see if this rings a bell. The king has compassion, bears the cost, dies to the whole bookkeeping system so that the servant may have a new life. Does that ring a bell? All right. So who else has books in here? The servant has a little book, not quite so big as the other guy, the king. And he goes right out. These guys are the servant. Owes him 100 pence, which is not nothing, but it's not much compared to the other. He keeps the book to himself. He's going to keep his book. Do you think he's going to throw out the book? No. You know what? He's going to take his book right to jail with him. Right to jail. He's going to keep that book right here. He's not giving up that book at all. He's clinging to it, and he goes to prison. So, here's the thing I'm going to leave with you today. I'm going to give you a books that you can take home with you. And I have them pass out here. Actually, here's the pass out. After it's over. If you do this right, you end up with a book here and a book here. So this left hand, right hand. I'm going to have you fill out this book because I want you to do this because I think you may have done this internally, but if you do it externally, it'll make a huge difference. The one book that is here is Our Understanding of God, and that'll go on your left hand. And I want you to write on the left side here all the good things you've done, all the good habits you have. You avoided stealing. You didn't do this. You don't have. You're not addicted to cocaine. You support the ecclesia. You're here. You're here today. Boy, definitely put that one down. You are here today. What righteous, good righteous things you've done here, and put them on the left side. On the right side, put all the things that you've not done well, that God might not love you for, all the boo-boos of your life, all those flaws you haven't been able to conquer, stuff that your wife or your husband doesn't even know about, your dad and mom don't even know about, but put them on the minus side because you got them. You know it. They're there. It won't be, in fact, you may... You can actually use the inside if you want here. And nobody's going to see this, by the way, okay? Nobody's going to see it, so write those in. And these are horrific things, you know, see those secret things. Okay, the second book. I'm going to pick up one of these. By the way, you kind of fold them up. There's only one right way to do it, okay? So you'll figure it out. It's our relationship with others. The left side, all the nice things that have happened to you. People who have hugged you and done nice things. Now, on the right side, I want you to put all the ugly things that people have done to you, abuse, slander, betrayal, gossip, infidelity, cheating, cold shoulders, rotten relationships, abandoned, isolated, dishonesty, people stole something, you got fired cruelly, you got jilted by a brother or sister, just as any bad, unfair treatment, all those things that really grate you, you all got them. You all got them. In fact, here, definitely. You're going to need the inside. Definitely. All right. When you do that, you have this book here. God is saying to you, I'm willing to shred this so I don't even keep score. I'm willing to throw away the book. I'm willing to throw away the book.
If there are shredders, you can use this later on.
Yeah, it really does a good job. Now, I ask you, are you willing to shred this book? That means not keep score. All those wrongs that are way wrong, revenge is totally seemingly in order, maybe. Are you willing to shred this book? Or do you want to keep it? Let me tell you something. The key to this parable is the torture is in the books. It's not a prison. It's not a dungeon. The torture of this parable is in the keeping of books. If you keep books, you will live in torture. So I say to you, you want to try to do this. If you take these home with you, it will take a while to turn. You can do that later. So I'd like to give my concluding thought. And here's my concluding thought. This parable is actually very negative the way it ends. So it starts with grace. It ends in judgment. It starts with a king, ends without the king, isolated in torture. It starts with the book being tossed. It starts with a book being tossed and ends with the books being retrieved, actually. So I'm going to say to you, why don't we do the opposite? Why don't we do the opposite today? Let's start by throwing out your book. And then your torture chamber, I'll call it. Number two, come to the king in thankfulness, verse 27b. And three, receive his grace.